I call this meeting of the Fluvana County Board of Supervisors to order, and we will begin with the pledge of allegiance followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. We'll begin with the adoption of the agenda.
I move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Nichols.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, just a few quick things. The carnival that was held last week actually got rained out Saturday night, but still, relatively speaking, did pretty good even with the rain out. They made almost $19,000, where it was just $1,000 more the year before. But if we had not had the rain out on Saturday night, they would have exceeded that total, I think. It still made over $5,000 for county contribution to that, and so that's the numbers there on the screen. We get 25% of their gate, plus $50 per game that they have there, so it was $5,228. And the crowd was pretty good. We didn't have anybody come in with their litter bags, which was probably good, although nobody brought selfies in either. But there have been some orange bags around the county, so it's, you know, some people have gotten them. I think the bags and the vests are still at the post office. My park direct guy's not here, so. But anyway, good time was had by all that attended, I think. Jeremy Armentrout has done some work for his Eagle Scout project and completed three benches along three of the holes in the front nine of the disc golf course, and you can see the benches that got installed there. Nice heavy-duty places for older folks to rest as they go from hole to hole. So, it's a pretty cool place. I'd like to add a work session to your agenda. I know you don't like to have a lot of work sessions, especially after going through budget season, but we need to get a couple things out of the way. On your June 5th meeting, I'd like to do the facility planning and space utilization work session that night. The study is done. We've vetted it with all different constitutional officers and department heads and agency heads, but we need to get it to the board so the board can give us some guidance and direction on that too. So on your June 5th meeting, you'd like to do your regular meeting at 4, have your dinner and closed session in between, and then do a 7 o'clock work session over in the Morris Room if that will work for all of you. Seeing no dissent,
sure.
Thank you. Okay, and then you still have the property maintenance one on June 19th. Now, I think in front of you, too, you have a flyer that Ms. Harris gave to you that talks about the agenda for that property maintenance one. It's also a copy of that agenda that we gave to all the fire and rescue chiefs on Monday night, too, so they know about that discussion, because you're going to talk about Virginia Maintenance Code, State Fire Protection Code, the spot blight abatement, business license, all those types of things wrapped up into one in one session that night. So that'll be in here in the courtroom before your 7 o'clock meeting.
Y'all know what all that is, don't you? Mr. Nichols is trying to make sure he gets to spend as much quality time with us as possible over the last month and a half.
You are absolutely
you're not
a mind reader. I can't even believe that you thought that up all by yourself, Mr. Chair. That's great.
Watch that.
That's exactly what my motive
can't
was.
Believe you thought it up.
So
yeah,
that you means you're that. Psycho. I mean psychic. So very good. Yep. And I do have three meetings left. And then the treasurer's office. When they've had some visitors up there, maybe trying to pay their tax bill. Didn't work out very well. He left and knocked over the trash can when he left, but there was a bear they picked up on the cameras. But they also have some problems in the floor. In the entry area of the treasurer's office, we were aware of some floor problems in there when we did the renovation. But now, after they put the new flooring down in the outer office area, the floor itself, the subflooring underneath it, is really just kind of hollow. It apparently is retaining moisture and then bubbling up the surface material, and so when they tapped into it, you could see that there's, you know, empty space below it. We don't know if the foundation's sinking. We think that the foundation on that addition was just not done very well when it was done, when they put the new flooring in, and it seems to be pretty unusual, and I would maybe say shoddy work, because the floor is so thin over just some substrate of dirt and rock.
When was this done?
Oh, when was the addition done?
Well, this work.
No, this was just in the last week or so we found this. It was bubbling up, so we dug into it. Now we've got it covered up so they can get through tax season, but we've got to go in and do some maintenance. When we did the...
So Ms. Lindher will do anything to avoid having to deal with...
I guess, not have the taxpayers come in, but...
Thank God for the drop box.
Yeah, that's where they're dropping their taxes in there, so... But we had a similar problem on the inside when we had to break through the floor, but now it's outside, and I expect this is going to be a fairly extensive problem. Because you can see, that floor, this concrete floor, is really only about an inch or so thick, and nothing underneath it. I don't even understand how anybody could pour something like that for a home, much less a commercial establishment.
But this was done years ago, right?
Right, yes. But that building's had two or three or four different additions and major changes over the years, so who Lord knows how long ago this happened, but whatever was underneath it is not holding up, and so we're going to have some problems to deal with after treasurer's tax season is over. We've put some covers over that and some plates down and moved some things out of there so people can... not be injured, but I think I'm more worried about the bear than I am the floor. So anyway, that's all I have, other than just to remind you, remember, so now you have a work session at your next meeting, your 4 o'clock meeting, and then a work session in the evening, and then the following time you have the regular work session, that property maintenance work session, and your regular meeting, and then your combined meeting in July. Then you won't meet again until the first week of August. So any questions I can answer for the board?
Harris, I looked at my calendar. An invitation was sent out for the 17th or the
19th?
The 2 weeks. The 16th, I'm sorry, of July. I think it was written down for me.
We can take that one off then, right? Yeah. You won't have a second meeting in July. It'll be all on July 2nd. So. And remember, that's a Tuesday night. I've got Wednesday in here. Sorry.
That's what it is. It is the 17th.
Yes, right. It would have been, yes. Take the 17th off. But this actually says Wednesday, but it should say Tuesday. That's the because you moved it away from your 4th of July holiday. So
the July is Tuesday?
4th of July is on Thursday. You would have normally have had your meeting on Wednesday night, the 3rd, but you moved it back to Tuesday night, the 2nd.
Okay. You'll remind us when time comes.
My competent assistant will, because I'll forget.
I'm going to show up on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm probably
on Wednesday. If you show up on both days, we'll give you cookies no matter what. So.
If you show up on Wednesday, it'll be a full meeting.
Mr. Chairman,
that's all I have.
Mr. Chairman, while you're talking about scheduling,
yes, sir.
The board should be aware I'm not going to be here on your first meeting in June. It happens to be the date of my granddaughter's graduation from high school, so I'm playing hooky. One or the other of my deputies will cover. They haven't decided which one.
Not a problem, Mr. Payne.
They're waiting to see how long.
For letting us know.
They're waiting to see how long the agenda is. I'm pretty sure.
toss a coin.
Actually, it's more like they're waiting to see whether Will can beat Donna down.
I'm gonna leave that one alone. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Nichols. Any questions or comments? All righty. Hearing none, we will now begin the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the witness chair, state your name and address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the first round of public comments. I covered up the sheet. We will begin now with the public hearings. A, VDOT secondary 6-year plan, Bethel, Kefialo.
Yep.
God, I did this last time. All right, Kefialo, thank you very much for coming in.
Of course. Good evening, Chairman Sheridan, members of the board. So we submitted a secondary 6-year plan recommendation for you that included the estimate for your 2025 allocation, which is about $96,000, and currently there are only two projects in your secondary 6-year plan that are not fully funded, and so our recommendation was that you would use your 2025 allocation to fully fund those two projects. Another option is to put that allocation into a separate balance entry account and save it for a future project that you guys can pick at a later date, or to pick a new project to put that allocation towards for other improvements on another route.
So there's $96,000 that's not being used this year?
There's $96,000 estimated for your 2025 allocation. So that's a future allocation, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any comments, any questions?
Our recommendation was to put that towards the last two projects that aren't fully funded, so that's what we submitted to Kelly and to Mr. Nichols.
And that's what will be on your motion. We'll mm-hmm. pick that up.
All righty. So,
I have a question. I just want to have a comment on page one of the unpaved secondary roads. It's 00759 is the route number. And it says White Hill, but the name is Whitehall.
Okay, you can change that. Thank you.
And I also had, I don't know if this is the right time to bring this up, but I had a email from a constituent, mm-hmm. and they are worried about stormwater runoff off of 618. So I made you a copy of the email.
That's great.
I'm going to go to see it tomorrow.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks.
When you get through, I have some comments too, something to bring up too, and I don't know whether it's the right time either to bring it up.
We'll figure it out.
Okay. You want to bring it? Okay. On Branch Road, Mr. Herb Rawling, they have about 46 houses on Branch Road. It's actually on Branch Springs, you go in there. And they would like a speeding sign put in there someplace. It's not. The other day there was a truck in there. He went off the edge of the road, turned to the left too fast, and he overturned. So he says they're going pretty fast in there, and he wonders if you all could do something, help them out.
Sure. We can do a study there.
Branch Road or Branch Springs?
Well, Branch Road, but it's the road going in there is called Branch Springs.
What's the speed limit in it now?
They don't have it.
So it's not posted right now?
That means it's 55.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought
it was 55 if it's an unposted country road for here.
Put it this way, when I get on here with the driver's ed car, I look at him and say, if you go over 45, I'm hitting brake.
So if that's the case, if nothing else, we would want to request a speed study from Mr. Right. Saunders for that area, because if it's not posted, that means it's a 55 rural road, and if the driver's education teacher, driver's ed teacher is taking students out there and making them stay under, there's a reason for that. So
we have like 46, 48 houses in there too.
Sure.
All jammed together.
Yeah. I know that one of them has daycare, mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff.
Well, it's curvy back through there, some of the places, and they're going on curves too fast. And
it's very curvy and doesn't have a whole lot of ditch.
Yep. Yeah, it's got a lot of ditch.
Get off that road, you're in trouble.
It's got a lot of ditch. That's the problem. Well, no edge.
No edge. Yeah. All right.
Okay, that's a thank you.
Is that the only one, sir?
Yes.
Anyone else? Believe it or not, I have none to talk about.
Okay.
Thank you so very much. And now, hearing no other further questions, I will now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments for 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak for this public hearing? Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. Okay, do we have any other questions or comments by the board? Do I have a motion?
I move to accept the resolution for VDOT secondary 6-year plan 2019-20 through 24-25 and VDOT construction priority list 2019/20 as required by section 33.1-23 and 33.1-23.4 of the 1950 Code of Virginia.
Motion is made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Fall behind on the checks. B, SUP 1903. Michael Brooks, Holly Steele Planner.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Good evening.
We have special use permit 1903, Mr. Michael Brookman. I always do this wrong. There we go. This is a request for a special use permit to construct a specialty retail store for the sale of firearms with respect to 10.549 acres of tax map 52, section 8, parcel 2. This lot lies in our rural residential community planning area and in the Fork Union Election District. Our applicant wishes to construct a retail store that includes an access driveway and parking lot. They wish to use the existing 18-foot paved driveway that is shared by the Fork Union Animal Clinic as the primary entrance to this property. And there's no previous zoning history on this property. You can see it lies right at the intersection of Route 15 and Route 6. And this property is the Fork Union Animal Clinic, and this is the property our applicant is applying to put his gun shop in this cleared area here, so right in the middle of the parcel. And this is the zoning, so you can see everything around it is zoned A1 agricultural. So this is sideways, but you can see this would be Route 15 here, and this is the entrance by the animal clinic, and it would lead straight back to Mr. Bookman's shop. This is the entrance to the property. You can see the Fork Union Animal Clinic sign. This is the entrance as if you were to turn in headed towards the clinic. And this is if you go all the way to the back of where the clinic has stopped paving, looking back towards Mr. Brookman's property. We did have a neighborhood meeting, and we had one person come from the Fork Union Animal Clinic. She asked if there was enough room for a sign without being in the VDOT right-of-way and without blocking the sign that they just put up. The applicant said he would work with VDOT to make sure the sign was not in the right-of-way and was not blocking their sign, but he is also open to posting the sign at the entrance of his parcel instead of all the way out on the road. She also was concerned about how much traffic could be expected, and he said that there should be, based on what his current influx is, no more than 3 or 4 people in his shop at a time. However, there will likely be daily FedEx and UPS deliveries. And will there be noise coming from the building? More specifically, will there be a gun range with shooting? And he said no, there will be neither an indoor nor an outdoor range. And this question did come up in the Planning Commission meeting about if he were to change his mind at some point and put in a range, and that wouldn't be possible because a shooting range is a separate use and would require a different special use permit. To conclude, this request is to construct a specialty retail store for the sale of firearms. It would bring economic development to the county. This building is largely hidden from the right-of-way and adjoining property owners by other parcels and also dense trees, respectively. It does appear to meet all of the county code requirements. It was recommended for approval by the Planning Commission 5-0 on May 7th of this year. However, the potentially adverse impacts of this would be increased traffic flow to the property on an already busy roadway, and the security of the products inside the building. And Mr. Brookman is very eloquent at talking about the security of his building, if you all have additional questions about that. And Mr. Brookman is here tonight if you all have any questions for him or for myself.
Are there any questions?
I thought there was a different entry. You're saying that they're going to enter where the animal clinic road.
Yes.
And I thought that there was another entrance.
So, yes, there.
Yeah.
There is another entrance. You could see it. Steve, can I go back using this, or can you go back for me? Okay. Go back one more. Okay, this is fine. So you can see the red dotted line directly to the left of where the Fork Union Animal Clinic's entrance is. Actually, maybe go to the zoning one. I think it might be a little easier to see. Next one. There you go. It's much brighter on there. So you can see there is another entrance. However, Mr. Dahl spoke with VDOT, and they would prefer if two commercial entrances, they require 225 feet of distance between those. And you can see these two entrances would be, I think from what Mr. Brookman said, about 15 feet apart. So they
VDOT won't approve those two entrances.
Correct.
Side by side.
Correct.
We talked to Mr. Saunders today.
I was concerned about the entrance, and I thought someone was going to be here.
Candace is here from the Fork Union Animal Clinic. And if you all are interested, I did pull the deed and the plat for these parcels, and there is an easement in perpetuity for access to Mr. Brookman's property using that entrance. He does plan to pave it, so from where it stubs out on the Fork Union Animal Clinic's property, he plans to pave that all the way back to his shop.
And how wide was that again?
18 feet. 18? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought you said that, and I thought you said that there was another entrance.
There is another entrance, but VDOT will not approve it.
Correct.
They won't approve two commercial entrances that close together on a 55-mile-an-hour highway, or even on a 25-mile-an-hour road. Alan Saunders said we met with him today. And so these two are literally very close together. The alternative one is just an overgrown gravel path that could have been used if VDOT would ever allow it. But in that location, they will not allow two commercial entrances, even low volume commercial entrances that close together. And so because the easement is already there for access to here, it
and
makes
I
the most commercial
like
sense
to
come in and out of there.
All right, any other questions? All righty, I will now call Mr. Brookman up. Do y'all have any questions, Mr. Brookman? Do y'all have any questions for him?
I think one or two.
Okay, please come up.
Hello, folks.
My one question is what
Oh,
is
hang on.
Yes. Oh, sure. My name is Michael Brookman. My address is 4909 James Madison Highway, Fork Union.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a regular, it's a FFL, Federal Firearms Licensed a firearm store. I've had a firearm store in Charlottesville for 9 years now. Pretty well, you know, anything common to firearms. We do sell ammunition, you know, hunting supplies, not really necessarily hunting supplies, but hunting firearms, rifles. Yeah, ammunition. We do also do reloading supplies, black powder, and such for black powder folks. Yeah.
You don't sell personal guns?
Yes, yes.
You do?
Oh, yes, 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 ma'am.
I thought.
Yeah.
But you're talking about you sell the black powder guns?
Sure, yeah, we do. You know, there's a hunting season for black powder, and, you know, it's really popular around. But, no, we do, you know, several different lines of firearms, you know, long guns, handguns. Yeah.
And stores like that, I don't know much about guns, but stores like that, are they common to be sort of off the roadways, or you know, it seems like it's not ideal from a practical perspective?
Well, a firearm store is more or less a destination. You don't, as a matter of fact, where my store is located now in Charlottesville, I'm in a fairly high traffic area. I wasn't really, after being there for just a short period of time, I wasn't really that comfortable with the high traffic area. Matter of fact, so much so that I secured my entrance with maglocks and made it only accessible if you rung the doorbell, and once we had a visual on you, we would buzz you in. Yeah, I'm more or less that type of store that's a niche store. So it doesn't really depend upon a high traffic area. It's actually one of the reasons I'm trying to.
So how is this store secure?
Sure.
If you're off the road and you don't see people around, please don't
come by. Right.
How's this secure?
Sure. So I've had unfortunately the experience of people trying to break into my store. I've had three attempted break-ins. All three were unsuccessful. As a firearm dealer, that's your worst nightmare. Someone be able to get in there, and because they're there for one reason, and those guns would hit the street really quick. So I have a fairly distinct background in security, high levels of building security. And like the shop I have now, unfortunately, has a lot of window coverage in it. But what I did was I used a ballistic, in the State Department, we used a lot of ballistic film for IEDs and ramming. So I applied all that ballistic film to my frontage of my store, and that's what kept those three break-ins from being successful. Out here, I'm going to rely more upon concrete. Steel reinforced concrete. It's you know, it's basically windproof, fireproof. You know, it's set up properly with concrete and steel bollards. I'm not sure if you know what bollard. It's a bollard like what you see in a gas station, so people won't hit the pumps. Those are called bollards, and we use them extensively for security. Bollards are very effective from keeping anyone from trying to ram a building. What's not protected by that would be protected by steel rolled down doors. We used stainless steel doors, not aluminum. They're very, very difficult. That along with cameras, motion detectors, and also would have a professionally installed internal alarm system. Noise systems are very helpful because no one can really break into your place without making noise. And that's what triggered all three of the alarms at my store in Charlottesville, was the noise of them trying to bust out one of the windows. After this second hit, that alarm was off. And you know, they got about four or five more hits in before they got, you know, kind of freaked out and left. They don't really, I mean, they're looking for something soft, a soft target. And, you know, when you make a target extremely difficult and hard, they'll just move on.
So, yeah. And is this strictly retail or retail and wholesale?
No, it's retail. I plan on it's also going to be I'm also going to be putting in a small apartment in there for myself. You know, but yeah, it just be strictly for retail.
So basically, you're going to transfer your store from Charlottesville out here?
I am.
Any other questions? Thank you so very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Hearing none, we'll now open the public hearing. Comments is 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wish to speak at this time? Come on up, state your name and address, dear.
My name is Candace Waycaster. I'm at 6690 James Madison Highway, Fork Union Animal Clinic. I'm the hospital manager there and have been discussing Dr. Babbitt, who owns our property. We lease from him. He wasn't able to come tonight and discuss this with you, but I have concerns about the easement that was outlined in the contracts for my lease and for the sale of the property to Mr. Bookman. The easement, according to Dr. Babbitt, is not associated with the property that the Fork Union Animal Clinic is on, and we would not permit additional traffic coming in. It's a liability for us. We have patients and clients and people walking pets outside constantly, and I don't think that that's a safe thing for them to have to navigate. So the intended easement is the logging road that is right next to our driveway, and that would be the easement that would be included in the sale of that property, according to Dr. Babbitt. So that would be my first issue with that. I don't necessarily have issues with the business or anything associated with that. I know that I did bring up the issue of noise, specifically gunfire, if there was ever going to be an intended shooting range. Noise phobia for dogs and cats is a legitimate thing. It's something that our doctors diagnose and prescribe medications for frequently around fireworks season. So if we have patients that are in our boarding facility that have that problem, there's not a lot that stops them from tearing apart whatever they're contained in to get away if they're afraid enough. So that's a liability for us and for our patients. Additionally, the signage would also be a concern. The sign would have to be on our property. And you know, we have tried really hard to maintain the agricultural setting around the animal clinic. I know that the reason that it was built the way that it was behind the trees with the long, nice driveway was so that we could maintain that in the county so that it's a commercial business, but it still looks residential and is very appealing and doesn't have a lot of signage going on. We are already competing with three or four VDOT signs around our sign, which there's not a lot we can do about that. But adding more to that is just a visual distraction, a lot of visual noise for driving down the road.
The question here is that parcel that we're talking about where the other driveway is appears to be on GIS nominally, it's not fully accurate, but that's a FUMA-owned partial. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to check and see if FUMA provided the easement. In any case, VDOT's not going to allow two commercial entrances, even low-volume commercial entrances, that close together.
That's not really the controlling issue. The controlling issue is that I'm looking at copy plat that is referred to in the deed, and the plat shows a 50-foot easement on the animal hospital property coming back to Mr. Brookman's property.
So you're saying it's all right then?
That's what the plat shows.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I haven't done the title to it, but as Ms. Steele said, she went and pulled the deed. This is the deed she pulled, and there's a reference to a non-exclusive perpetual easement of right-of-way 50 feet in width, more particularly describing deed of gift of easement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's depicted on the plat as being on the animal hospital property. Now, if there's some ambiguity about that, it doesn't show on these instruments. Now, obviously, I haven't examined the title all the way, so I can't say that's the way life is, but it certainly is the way life appears to be from these documents.
So from the perspective of making a decision now, what legal recourse does Fork Union Animal Hospital have if they disagree with that sort of assessment? Mm-hmm.
Well, they can sue to enjoin the use of it. Mm-hmm. And that would be the remedy. And you don't have any say over that. There either is an easement or there is not an easement. Right. If there isn't, then you can approve the permit, but that doesn't give Mr. Brookman any additional rights of the property in the animal property. On the other hand, if you approve it and the animal hospital thinks that he doesn't have those rights, they have the right to try to get an injunction or whatever remedy they might pick. But that's, as I say, I just saw this for the first time tonight.
Sure.
But it's pretty clear that the easement is depicted as being on the animal hospital property.
And from a protocol perspective, is it better for us to defer a decision on this until that issue is resolved or not?
As far as I'm concerned, it is resolved, unless there's some challenge to these documents. Is it?
Ms. Brookman, did you have a title search done before you bought your parcel?
Yes,
ma'am. And it shows that? Okay. Right. And it didn't show any problem with it?
No.
Okay.
Could I show Mr. Brookman this document, this plat?
Yes, sir, please. Make sure we're looking at apples and apples.
It seems like Mr. Baffin thinks that's
a problem. Well, and I'm not sure why he'd think there was an easement through the Fork Union property, because that property adjacent to it, according to our records, is owned by Fork Union Military Academy.
I'm sure that's one of those ones that was left to them by
somebody. Oh, yeah, you're right, sir.
My only thought was that you're looking at this.
I'd be glad to show this to this.
Yeah, please. Just what I got here.
This is
the only other solution we could have is if they used the same entrance
back here and stops.
But then you turn before you got to the hospital itself and put the driveway beside it.
Well, the driveway is beside. You'd have to go through, you have to cut through the woods and go down it, but
I'm just saying if it just cut through 10, 15 feet.
You could put a sign there and have the road split, this animal hospital versus
split,
this.
But then we'd have to go back and go see two other landowners whether or not they have right of way on that.
It also means, you're right. I don't know that he's got right of way on this
That's
land.
That's what I'm saying. We know we're looking at an easement on the animal plant side.
You could theoretically split it, but that would then likely cost the applicant more money because he'd have to pave a much longer length.
Well, it would also be, I don't want to speak for VDOT, but VDOT's going to talk about where the two entrances merge and things like that. So
it, but VDOT's okay with it if you want.
Should
yes.
Be.
Yes.
Are those VDOT roads at that point in time?
I'm sorry?
No, not when you come off the road. It's the entrance to a VDOT road.
It, yes, VDOT has statutory right to control entrances onto public roads. Uh-huh. And that's
considered an entrance.
Well, no, it's within their right of way. Remember that VDOT owns, I don't know what the right of way is on 15, but it's a good deal wider than the pavement. So,
Mr. Sheridan's talking about it merging into further down the road.
Yeah, I know what he's doing. I know what he's talking about.
So my question is simply, because it's emerged in, it's still considered part of the entrance way. Is that what you're saying?
Well, VDOT is going to define what the entrance is. And if they can't meet VDOT standards, then they can't use it. But it's not unheard of to have an entrance that immediately branches out into two or more directions. That's possible.
Yeah, they could.
But it's pretty clear to me that there's an easement there in favor of Mr. Brookman. I did show it to him, and he said that was the plat that's in his chain of title. It appears to be on his face.
Any other questions?
By the way, the deed is from Dr. Patton.
Oh, okay. So he purchased the land from Dr. Patton?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think Dr. Patton thought that he would have to separate
entrance.
When I talked to him, he thought it would be a separate entrance.
Well, but that's what we've been explained by
VDOT.
You can't have two entrances at
once. Well, and at the Planning Commission meeting, the applicant didn't say he was going to have a separate entrance.
Well, that's not. I don't know what
right.
I'm talking
about. Right. We want to make sure that we can try to make both places happy because we enjoy hopefully having both there.
Yeah.
Well, do y'all have any speed bumps? I don't think I saw speed bumps.
There aren't any. I was just in there today.
I didn't know if that would be something that...
Is that long that you need speed bumps?
Well, if they're worried about people driving fast or maybe possibly a dog, animals at playtime, if we do this. Just to drive slow instead of children at play, animals at play.
Well, make that part of the condition if you
want. Mr. Brookman, do you think that would be an issue if we just got a couple signs, animals at play, trying to just do what we can to
I didn't help my deal.
Just going out of ideas.
I wouldn't suggest making a condition absolutely because Mr. Brookman doesn't have the authority to post a sign on it.
Oh, there y'all.
He just has an easement to drive on the park.
He could pay for speed bumps on the road. Could he agree to pay for speed bumps on the existing road?
Only if the owner agreed to it.
Only if the owner agrees, right?
Yeah, if the owner agreed to allow that to be done.
I mean, obviously, these are neighbors, and
Right.
They're going to have
be neighborly.
They're going to have to be neighborly, and they're going to have to work out some of these issues.
Sure. So when we're talking to this young lady, the concerns were for other UPS and FedEx point down. Concerns were the animals out there, the customers, or what? How close do they come to the building? It does seem like there's going to be a lot of traffic.
Our driveway, I don't know if you can tell from the pictures or if you... It runs right past our building, and it is
going to be more than twice that.
Maybe 15 feet from the side of the driveway to our building, there's a patch of grass, and I mean, people walk their dogs there all the time. Additionally, I have concerns. I have
staff that's there after hours to take care of the patients that are there. And I know that we've had more than one occurrence of suspicious vehicles in our parking lot, and they contact me and I contact the sheriff's department, and they're there to help with the security of that, especially in the winter when it gets dark at 4:30. So that raises an additional safety concern for me and the team for having vehicles there when there's only one usually.
Okay. Any other questions, Ms. White? Thank you very much.
Thank you guys very much.
Real quick, Mr. Brookman.
Yes.
What are the hours of operation?
Sure.
Just to address that thought of people coming in after hours.
The suggested condition is 10 to 6, Monday through Saturday.
10 to 6,
yes.
Okay, 10 to 6. All right. Thank you. All right. Any other questions or comments? All right. Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 1903, Michael Brookman's request for a special use permit, SUP 1903, to construct a specialty retail store for the sale of firearms with respect to 10.549 acres of Tax Map 52, Section 8, Parcel 2, located at the Fork Union, in the Fork Union District, subject to the 9 conditions listed in the staff report.
May I say the
9
conditions?
Yes, ma'am. There's 8 of them, and the 9th one is this one down at the bottom about your authority to revoke.
We got the motion.
Oh, sorry. It's so there's 9, there's 8 of them. The 9th one just says you have the authority to revoke if they breach the conditions of the special use permit. So there's the 8 principal ones right there.
Hours of operations, number 5.
Yeah, we hit that.
I just forgot to put that.
Mm-hmm. I know it's.
All righty. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. C. Code regarding exemptions from license fees for certain vehicles.
So this was just one that was brought a few months ago by Mr. Dorsey, I think through Mr. O'Brien, and requested that we treat volunteer deputies the same way we treat volunteer firefighter and fire and rescue personnel by waiving the $33 vehicle license fee on a primary vehicle, a licensed vehicle or a motorcycle, but a primary vehicle, just one vehicle. So the code is already in place. The addition to that code is this last sentence down here, just adding on essentially starting January 1st of next year that volunteer deputies would be subject to that same waiver of a $33 fee for a primary vehicle. Yeah, except for elected officials. So. Is he here? Oh, he is here.
About, he's back there. Yeah.
About $500.
But anyway, so that's what it costs.
Build this is, a house for that.
I can tell you this much. When I came around and they did the triathlon, the volunteer deputies were the ones directing traffic quite a bit.
And this would be, you know, between
I didn't see one of them there.
$200 and $600 a year in lost revenue for the county. It'd be relatively small. So.
Well, you were at the main gate. All right.
That's where they have the chairs for the old deputies to sit.
All right. Any questions from the board? No questions? We'll now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Anyone wish to speak to this at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. Do we have a motion?
I move that the Savannah County Board of Supervisors approve the ordinance to amend and reenact Chapter 15, Article 2, Section 15-2-3 of the Savannah County Code regarding exemptions from license fees for certain vehicles.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes by 5-0. I will say I am so glad to hear Mr. O'Brien speaking out loud and clear.
That was fast, too.
All right. Action matters. D, FSBCA, Public Animal Shelter Agreement Revised 2019. Mr. Nichols.
So, just a couple updates to this agreement. Normally, the agreement said in the past that the county would provide $6 per capita based on the 2010 census for funding for the public animal shelter. About a year ago, you approved a change to that by adding about $35,000 and $40,000 in last year's budget to increase pay for the staff there, because the staff was at $8 an hour and you were taking it to $10 an hour, and they don't get benefits. It still seems to be a historically cheap cost, inexpensive cost for us to run a public animal shelter, but that original $6 per capita was about $160,000 a year. When you added the $40,000 on it, that became $200,000 a year. To put that total dollar value into this agreement, we changed the agreement to say $8 per capita, which comes out to about $200,000 a year. So that's what the baseline is. The FSPCA will come back every year through your budget cycle to come in and actually request a separate budget or any budget budget changes, but the baseline for you is about that $200,000. That's why it's $8 per capita now, based on the 25,691 residents that were in the 2010 census. So this budget year, you actually approved a budget that was about $100,000 higher than that. It was $301,000, I think, is what you approved. But that's because you were adding to that $10 per hour, trying to increase that. Plus, we went back and did a review of all the costs of the FSPCA and tried to come to agreement on this cost. Is it 100% FSPCA cost, 100% public animal shelter cost, or somewhere in between? Most were about 75-25, 75 public animal shelter, 25% FSPCA. Some were 100% county, some were 100% FSPCA. But on average, it was about 75% of the cost. So therefore, you ended up funding 301 this year, but the agreement would have called for a baseline, a minimum of a little over $200,000 in this coming fiscal year. That's what this change to the FSPCA Public Animal Shelter Agreement reflects.
Actually, the wording of this sort of flips the numbers around. What it doesn't call for a specific figure. What it calls for is there's a presumptive amount that's $8 an hour.
That's right.
But the actual number is set by your in your budget. So if you find that their costs have gone down, I smile as I say that, and your budget, you reduce the budget, then it can be less than $8. If their costs go up and you budget more, then they get whatever you award.
In other words, this $100,000, they're going to be able to spend all that $100,000, is that right, in the new budget?
I expect they will, yes.
But that
that's assumes, you realize that's a 50% increase, and over the last 4 years, it's averaged about 15%.
I do realize that.
The point is that
I presented
that's
as
tremendous.
A proposal. I presented as a proposal to the board and explained the rationale for it, of the percentage of operational costs, because they were floundering, and that's what it was presented.
The point is that what this does is it leaves the setting of the actual numbers up to you in the budget.
I don't see how you jump up $100,000 in 1 year. Actually, you're going from 190 to 301, 220.
Well, 190 was only a 9-month figure. It wasn't a full year figure, because you only funded 9 months of the pay increase. So it would have been 220.
Well, if you didn't, I don't know where I'd pick that up at.
Right.
I didn't see that. The year before that was 154,000.
Yes, sir.
Year before that was 128. Year before that's 130. And you go back to 215, and it's 129.
Yep.
So you have an average of 15% per year for the last 4 years, approximately 15%. So once you jump 100, I still don't understand that. I don't see how you can do that.
And it's a good and valid point, except that I didn't hear anybody asking that question during budget season.
Well, we're asking it now.
Okay. Well, the rationale was that historically the FSPCA provides your public animal shelter services. You don't have a choice. You have to provide a public animal shelter either by providing yourself or some contractual arrangement with someone, whether it's another county or FSPCA or the like. In this case, at least for the last 10 years, you've provided the FSPCA funding to serve as your public animal shelter based on state law. The funding for that used to be at $5 per capita. It went to $6 per capita that you agreed to about 3 years ago or so, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It went to, when it went to the $6 per capita, you added last year enough funds to take their base salaries for all their employees from $8 per hour without benefits, no benefits, to $10 per hour, no benefits, and you funded that from last year's, during the year last year. You funded that for 9 months out of the fiscal year, from October 1st to through the end of this coming June. If you annualize that, that means their annual budget from the county would be about $220,000 or thereabouts. You went to $301,000, $301,000 because we analyzed all their costs, came to agreement with the FSPCA on what costs were attributed to public animal shelter services that we don't have a choice on. We have to fund those things, and what was attributed to FSPCA core operations by themselves. For instance, their fundraising activities, that's a core cost of theirs. Microchipping all the animals that go through there is a core cost of ours because you required that in this agreement. You required them to microchip all animals as they release them out of the FSPCA and spay and neuter. And so that's a core cost. So those costs were over here. So we took the entire operational budget, broke it down by core costs. We presented this during the budget season and showed you the percentages. And most were about 75-25. Some were 100% either way, but that ended up being $301,000. And that's what you adopted during the budget season. It is a stiff increase from the $200,000 nominally that you budgeted for this year. But remember, that's because you were taking the pay then from $10 per hour to $11 per hour, trying to get somewhere close to a reasonable wage for a function that you're constitutionally required to have.
And no one's arguing about the constitutionally what we're added. No one's trying to circumvent that at all.
No, nor am I, sir. I just presented an alternative, an option to you during budget season, and you all voted on it. This is just the outcropping of that. This document gives you at least a baseline that's different from the baseline that was in there. The baseline that was there before said $6 per capita, end of discussion. This one says $8 per capita is the suggested amount, but you can go up or down during budget season because you all agreed to put them into budget discussions just like you do every other department in the county. And we can do it whatever way the board chooses to do, but that's what was determined during budget season and that you all agreed to.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
The money that's collected from the county dog tags, how much is that, and does that go to the
FSPCA? Yeah. The money that we get from the state is about $5,000 or $6,000 that people send to them.
What we collect from the treasurer's office for the dog tag license, we collect probably no more than
very much.
But does that go to FSPCA?
No, it comes into the
General Treasury. Yeah. Right. But there is some money that comes in that's for, is it?
We get some
state funds that come in that we funnel back directly to them.
I don't put up more than $1,000, and we have to pass that through to them because they have spay and neuter program.
And
that's what it was for, spay and neuter.
And that's part of their budget.
It goes back into their budget. And it was reflected in that budget for you this year.
Okay, and sure.
The FSPCA, and I think in years past, the amount that you were giving to us was greatly understated as to what the real costs were.
It was the amount that was requested, though.
I wasn't part of that, but it totally was less than what we really need to just do the basics of what the county requires. So that put us into more of a
I can remember us 3 or 4 years ago having this conversation, saying that we were going to, we don't know exactly what the cost is, but the cost is going to go up.
And the cost to build a new FSPCA shelter, or a new shelter, I think Goochland was about $2 million to build theirs, not counting staffing.
Pretty much pieced together every time something falls apart, we put it back together.
You know, we use that as an argument that it's going to be a lot more expensive. The state does requires more, and I understand that, but I don't see that the state has had any real problem with it. Over the last several years, we put tens of thousands of dollars in there to do different things. So I don't think we can use that as an argument that we need to raise it $100,000. Because we're going to do, I don't know of one board member who doesn't want to abide by state mandates. So that's where
I think one of the issues that we were looking at when we came and we had this discussion before with Mr. Weaver was that they could always look at us and say, go somewhere else. That's one thing we didn't want to have happen.
What do you mean go someplace else?
They would not serve as our shelter.
You mean the volunteers?
Correct.
I've got another question. It's said in our contract that we have a supervising county official. Is that you? Who's the supervising county official for the SPCA?
For animal shelter, public animal shelters, the sheriff's office, the animal control officer.
Okay, and it says that the contract with the FSPCA allows the county to have access to its books and records. And are they reviewed by the county?
We haven't had a formal review by an outside agency since 2015, because that's when all the things were going on. We had a formal review then. And we haven't since then, but their books are fully open, and I go to their board meetings periodically, and we've had no denials of any requests we've had for information from their data or records or personnel costs and things.
And when you didn't used to spay and neuter, because I have a bunch of feral cats, I had to take them to Albemarle. Do you now spay and neuter feral cats?
No, we don't do feral cats.
Okay. And do you only spay and neuter stray animals, or?
Whatever animals are brought to us, before we can adopt them out, they must be spayed or neutered.
Okay.
So, and we've been trying to do it as an ad needed, like when somebody says they want to adopt, then we try to, at that time, spay and neuter to keep the cost low.
Do citizens, can they bring their animals and pay you to spay and neuter?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the last speaker didn't identify herself.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Please state your name and address.
I'm Jerry Russell, 864 Redmond Woods Drive, Fort Union, 23055. I am now the presiding president of the FSPCA.
All righty. Thank you.
And just as a note, that we weren't asking for any funding requests tonight. The funding was already approved during the budget season. Mm-hmm. This is just a document reflecting that.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to make a motion.
If I can get to it, just a second.
No.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I move to approve the revised agreement with the Savannah Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, to provide public animal shelter services for Savannah County.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-1. E. Voluntary long-term care program. Ms. Rice.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This should be pretty quick. So back in 2010, the county had was presented an option to participate in a voluntary long-term care program through our Virginia retirement system. The county actually opted out at that time. I have not really been able to dig up why the county may have opted out from that, but we have the opportunity to jump back in now. And I'm going to walk you through what this program is and what it means to our staff here. So what the program is, it's a long-term care insurance that VRS is presenting to anyone who's a member of VRS across the Commonwealth. And it's an insurance program that's available to all VRS members and their family, and it provides for long-term care for injury, illness, folks on hospice, and the like. What it is this is a way of a one-time opportunity to opt in as an organization, and in order to do so, the governing body must agree must adopt the agreement by June 14th. So what is long-term care insurance? It's insurance coverage for recovery either in a facility, and it will also provide for folks if they're recovering from injury or illness at home. There's 2, 3, and 4 year coverage options. Like most insurances, there are pre-existing condition exclusions on it. And in this instance, the insurance premiums are paid directly by the employee. And so what it is, the insurance carrier, who is Genworth, will bill employees directly. And the employees are responsible for paying the premiums on their own. There's no contact through payroll. Family members of current VRS members who are aged 18 to 76 can be part of the program, and they're also able to be insured even if the employee is not covered. So there's also a tax benefit to it because we can't run it through payroll, and there's no pre-tax benefit for the insurance premium itself. If you receive payout on the policy because you're receiving care, then you don't have to claim it as income tax. So what is the county's obligation to participate in this program? The adoption agreement is actually for 3 years. The county can at that point then say, this isn't really providing a service to our staff, so we don't feel like participating anymore. We have to provide a list of all active employees to the insurance carrier, which they will then turn around and probably direct market, phone call, email our staff personally. We also need to allow VRS or the insurance carrier to come in and conduct training and informational sessions with staff. And then as far as my role or human resources, I will be assisting with enrollment, also providing training, setting up meetings and stuff like that. The good news, there is no payroll interface, and so it doesn't go through our financial system at all. All of our staff is direct billed. There is no cost to the county to participate in this program. So the way that this works, there's an agreement. There is one in your packet that I think hopefully you're able to review. We do need to make a decision and get that signed over to VRS by June 14th if we're going to participate. The open enrollment period for the insurance coverage is mid-September to mid-October. And the insurance, should we go down that road, will be available for all of our staff December 1st of this year. What questions do you have?
I have one.
Sure.
If the employee leaves their job, does the plan follow them?
It does. It's portable. Okay. And also, if the county decides not to participate and have new staff enroll in it down the road, the current people who are enrolled in it will keep their policy.
Good.
As long as they're making the payments on it.
Do you know what the premium would
be? I do have the rate sheet. It is fairly complex, and I can certainly email that to you. It's set up in a way, so there's 2, 3, and 4 year long-term coverage, and the rates are based on age, and there's minimal underwriting for employees, but for family members, they have to go through medical underwriting, so.
Yep.
Yeah, what, one thing to point out too. Yes, it does. The premium goes up with age. One thing I will point out is that through our current cafeteria plan with Colonial, we do not have a policy like this available to us. Mm-hmm. Just so you have that aware too.
Who brought this up to the county?
VRS sent us information because they also provide short-term disability for folks. The county's not part of that. But this was just another opportunity for, to provide a service at a discounted rate. They're getting volume discounts across the state is what they're doing. Oh, that's, I did not know that. Yeah, I did not know that.
Like Moselle, I've had a Genworth policy for a very long time. They're a good company. A little bit, not much.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Rice.
You're welcome.
All right, any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve Levanna County participation in the Commonwealth. of Virginia a voluntary group long-term care insurance program as presented and authorize the county administrator to sign the adoption agreement for program enrollment.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. F, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue for position description, Ms. Rice.
Okay. Tonight I'm presenting to you a position description to add to the county's library. This is in the commissioner's department. He is here as well tonight observing. So what we have currently are three positions and then the chief deputy. So you have a deputy one, two, and three, and a chief deputy. And what we've found is that there is actually additional responsibilities in the department, and especially pertaining to financing and budget in the real estate assessments and things of that nature that are above and beyond what the current deputy three position calls for. And so what we've done is just create a deputy four position description. It's kind of a template, and we'll just put that in the library. We do have somebody currently in the commissioner's office doing the work that is outlined in this. We're presenting this for approval. We're not asking for additional money.
You already funded this during your budget season this
correct.
Year.
Correct. So. Also on the consent agenda, which is a little bit further down, are the other deputy positions that were revised in order to be more in line with what this is. So.
Alrighty.
Do you have any questions?
Okay, you say the money was already in this year,
yes,
but we haven't used it.
No, you put it in the budget this year. You adopted the budget
with for the upcoming, yes.
For July 1st.
We talked about this, and this is just her coming forward now. Sure.
This is just the paperwork following what you approved in the budget.
That's
we don't do the paperwork on it until you approve it in the budget.
Okay.
So.
All right, any other questions? I have a motion.
I move to approve the new position description of a 2020 Deputy Commissioner of the Revenue for pay grade 14.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Do all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. And I will say how appropriate to have that is 2020, because tomorrow night we are dedicating the high school baseball field in the name of 20. There were two Coach Sheridans. He's the oldest one. He's 20 and I'm 19. And so tomorrow night they're having a program to dedicate the field for him. He's worked on it a lot more than all of us combined have worked on our yards. Yes, ma'am, Steve. But that's why I said 2020. Anybody that played for him knows him as 20. Because we got tired of both of us switching our heads around when he yelled Coach Shirt. All right, appointments, none. Presentations, none. Consent agenda, G, minutes of April 24th. H, minutes of May 1st. I, appointment of zoning administrator. J, accounts payable report April 2019. K, FY19 animal friendly supplemental appropriation. L, Zions Crossroads project agreement number 12, amendment with Dewberry. M, commissioner of the revenue position description update. Ms. Rice. What are we pulling, Mr. Weaver?
Okay.
That's all you grabbing your book.
You're absolutely right.
I'll need Ms. Twistel. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry.
The torch has been passed.
Okay. 493, the generator that we have in there. 493.
Okay.
It says Fork Union Sanitary District.
Fuzzy, right?
Where would that be classified under? What department would that be classified under?
Fuzzy.
Is it classified in with Fuzzy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reason being is they had a separate back here, and I didn't know whether it's supposed to be in this one back here or in here.
If no, it goes in. It goes into there when it gets
okay.
Plastic out.
Okay, that's what I was confused of. Let's see what else I have here. Okay, on 515, I found the explanation a little bit confusing to me. We have vehicle fuel, and then we have mileage reimbursements. Ordinarily, I thought with mileage allowance that you wouldn't be involved in any vehicle fuel. What's the...
It should say mileage allowances.
It should say mileage allowances. That vehicle fuel is incorrect.
Okay.
We'll reclassify in our system.
Okay, fine. Okay, I'm ready for a motion.
Wait, I have a few
okay,
questions.
Okay, excuse me.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've covered the FSPCA. And that's covered under the sheriff, is that correct?
The FSPCA, yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. And the, I see... Oh, under fire and rescue? The lake it gets 77,000, and then the fire and fluvanic rescue and voluntary fire get about 56,000. Is that for all of them, like Kent Store, Fork Union, Palmyra?
Can you ask again, please, ma'am? Sorry.
What? Ask again.
Yeah.
What line are you on?
304 under fire and rescue.
That's just their quarterly allocations.
Their quarterly allocations.
Uh huh.
And, but is that, am I asking, is the Fluvanna County Rescue Squad and their volunteer fire, is that Kent Store, Palmyra?
The rescue squad goes for all rescue squads. It's one
okay.
corporation, and they dole it out to their stations.
But then Lake Monticello is separate from the rest, okay.
Absolutely, yes. Yep. Right. Yeah, the Fluvanna Fire's funded is one line, Fluvanna Rescue's funded is one line, and Lake Monticello Fire and Rescue and Water Rescue are funded is one line, and then they dole it out within their organizations.
Oh.
So if we're gonna fire, we send them one lump sum to the treasurer and then they split it out to the three.
To the three.
Yeah, yeah. We don't send it to Kent Store and to Fork Union
and
to Palmyra.
And the lake gets all three, so
right.
A lot of theirs.
Because they have one corporation, and the Fluvanna Fire has one corporation, and Fluvanna Rescue has one corporation. So the checks go to three different corporations, and they spread it out within their organizations.
Okay. And your front door, it says the administration front door knob multi-lock was almost $1,500.
It's possible. I don't know. Yeah. That was
what number was that?
Probably the new combination lock that's on that door that we. The
okay, 339.
Is it on your door?
Yes, the okay. Door to the county administration room. The one that's in there, staff couldn't lock the door. If you had to lock the door to prevent someone from getting in, you had to go outside the door, punch the combination in, and then close the door. But it's a little late when somebody's coming down the hall trying to break in your office. So they changed it out with a different combination lock that, you know, dozens of people all use that lock. So, and that's about the cost for those digital ones.
Yeah.
And container rentals, that's not the same thing as Vanderlyn, is it?
Could be from Vanderlyn. I'm not sure depending on where it's for.
369, we spent $1,500 on mulch for Pleasant Grove Park. I think that maybe Vanderlyn has a pot. Well, I think they would give it to us just to get rid of some of their brown mulch. But
you're talking about the $1,520 for the mulch?
Yeah. Must be a lot of mulch.
That's a playground, probably, is my guess.
Probably.
Probably redid the entire
playground and then maybe right around the house itself.
Yeah.
But,
Library of the Sheriff's
Office. That daggone sheriff doing it to
inmates. Yeah, and there may be some good people in the world that would be glad to give us some mulch, but unless you provide some more staff to us, it's hard for us to run around and try to find donations from X folks and then arrange to get a donation and then do what we need to do. This is part of the cost of doing business. And it's
And they're probably going to look at us and go, well, in that case, you're going to deduct our tax bill, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Do they cost that out? Like, how much do they call several suppliers?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Without question, yeah. Those are truckloads, dump truckloads. They're not like, you know, 10 bags of mulch. These are yeah. Dump truckloads right. Of mulch for the multiple areas.
If you get them at Lowe's, it'd be 3 or 4 times.
Oh, yeah.
Way more, yeah. And I'm not suggesting we shouldn't be careful with this. We are very careful trying to buy those things, and we try to spread it out to different vendors, but we always try to get as competitive a price as we can. But it's not like the kind of mulch we buy for our house where I spend, you know, $200 on mulch. This is for all around the sheriff's office, the library, the treasurer's office, the playground at the Pleasant Grove. I mean, all our public buildings and stuff. So.
Is it Chinese mulch or is it American?
Yeah. please don't stir the pot anymore.
Oh, no. You're going to get taxed on that.
All right.
Okay, the last thing I noticed is, and you'll just get, this is for fun. Mr. Weaver, your building's light bill last month.
I noticed
$89.
I'm really disturbed over it. Everyone had put some insulation in that.
You were working
yes,
overtime.
I saw that. Yeah, I'm very disappointed.
How much was it?
Yeah, I'll try $89. I'll keep the lights off next time.
It's a line.
Thank you,
Mr. Danger. 482. Line 482.
No way that a building named after Mr. Weaver should have that high of
an
electric bill.
That's true.
We could change the name.
I thought about that. There, if you can get it cheaper, do it.
Seriously, why was it, that's 2 or 3 months?
It just, I don't know.
We'll pull it and look at it and see. Because that seems high for that little building. That's higher than my house.
That's what I thought.
It might be one of those things where it's just listed under his name and has
there's probably something that's on it, but we'll take a look at it.
But that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's not just that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
all right. Thank you so much, Ms. Cliffdale. You sure. Did a wonderful job for your first time. I'm glad y'all grilled it really well.
Okay.
All right. Is there any unfinished business?
We haven't made a motion on this.
Motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You ready for a
yes,
motion?
Sir. I'd be more than tickled.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve items G through M and that the accounts payable and payroll be ratified for April 2019 in the amount of $2,328,045.33.
Do we have a second, please?
Second.
Okay, we got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Any unfinished business? I don't think so. You got something,
Ms. Eager? No, it's under new business.
Okay. We'll move forward then to new business.
I thought you might want to have this. This is the email that I gave to VDOT.
Oh, from the erosion?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if we can help these people, but we sure should try.
Well, yeah, we'll take a look at it and see.
Thank you.
It may not be a VDOT issue, but we'll take a look at it.
Is that it, Michelle, for the new business?
Uh-huh.
Anyone else?
I have one.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
Okay. This was brought to my attention that, where is it? The soccer fields need to be mowed regularly. They've been so high, it's like 6 inches, and the kids can't play with grass that deep. And it's been a problem that some of the parents have gone in and stealthily and cut the grass before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And they also pay a fee to use our fields, the soccer leagues. And, you know, I think we need to try to get that done because more children probably play soccer at Pleasant Grove than any other sport.
Mm-hmm. So. I went in there the other day. Last week, during the week one day, and you had kids playing soccer, you had kids playing softball, and you had kids playing baseball.
Yeah.
It was a very good day. So that we need to look into that road. Mr. Stevens had said something about there was money we were going to find somewhere.
We're not finding any money from any of the VDOT sources, and we're still trying to find a way to use that 98 to make it some type of chip and tar so we can knock the problems down on it.
Right.
It's
That road is probably one of the most highly used roads in the county, period.
Which one is that?
Just driving back to soccer, baseball, and softball fields.
It's all gravel. It's all
big. It's hundreds
of cars.
And it washes out and ruts up some, you know, washboards. So That's probably as many complaints as I've had from people in my district is, you know, just the amount of dust that gets thrown up during the summertime when you, and that's a weeknight I was in there.
Yep.
And it was probably close to 150 cars in there on a weeknight. If you go in there on a Saturday, I dare say it's...
That's a boatload.
Yeah, I was going to say 500 to 750. It's they're playing all day long on all three fields.
Yeah.
That's something, if we can look into that and get that done. I know we had talked about it before. We had actually started talking about using money.
Right.
And,
all right.
Bob, Mrs. Nichols can share. We don't block. I told his dad about Remo Bluff Road. He's already been down there.
I've been down Remo Bluff Road.
It's pathetic. Mm-hmm. So two things. First of all, Mr. Dahl and I were just down there today, and we met with VDOT down there as well, and observed the trucks going in and out. We have to have a. We need a meeting with Dominion,
yes.
Sooner rather than later, and so we'll make some contacts with them and get that set up. I'd also like to get at least a couple of supervisors down there at a time to do a site tour for the project they've got going on, because they are absolutely, without any question at all, destroying our road. If they would just work with VDOT a little bit, they could come in the short way on Remo Road instead of going on West Bottom, and it would be a much, much shorter road, less damage to repair, and right now it's a really long, lengthy road, and the road is the worst in the county by far. It is just completely torn up from Route 15 all the way down to the Remo power plant. It's in really bad shape.
Don't they have an obligation to repair that and put it back into proper condition?
I would say they probably do not, because they're just a commercial entity driving on roads because it's a public roadway. Mm. And they would probably say they pay their taxes and they pay road taxes and things too. That's not the end of the story though. And remember, we've got some other things going on with them, and this will all be part of that discussion. But we'll be setting some stuff up and trying to get a couple of you down there to look around. We had some serious concerns down there today with VDOT and with the road itself. So
for the last, I'd say at least 2 weeks, it's been continually flagging because there's trucks coming in and out of one section.
And all the loaded trucks come down West Bottom, and the empty trucks go out Remo, the short way. And that's because there are two small bridges on Remo going back to Route 15, and they don't want to cross over. But Alan Saunders from VDOT said that they can shore up those bridges and maintain those a lot cheaper than they can fix all West Bottom Road, 655.
7 miles of road.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible patching too.
We have some car left over. Let's just throw it in here.
And not even very well. Today they were patching it, but they were just patching it with gravel. So
I better knock the front end off in front of my car today, and I should have said something about it on Dogwood Road. One of those little bridges, right, the closest one to Venable, mm-hmm. There's like a 4-inch dip before you hit the bridge.
We'll check that out. Didn't they just work on that bridge?
No, they're working on the one down on Deep Creek.
I know they're doing Deep Creek, but
that's on
we'll take a look at that one too on Dogwood.
Yes, sir. That's the one that breaks off to the left, and it's broken right before Miss Evans' house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We were driving down that today, and the kid was over to the next to the edge of the road, and all of a sudden I went, oh no. We hit that thing and almost went airborne. There goes an alignment on my car.
So anyway, we'll have some meetings coming up with Dominion, and there's we've got some pretty strong concerns.
Dogwood's got two bridges on there that both of them probably could use some tar.
Yeah, okay, we'll check it.
It's a road patch. I wish I'd thought about it. I'm glad y'all said that. But yeah, that at Remo Road, I've gone down that.
When you meet five
dump trucks traveling nose to tail that are all empty that are driving out.
Get
out of the road!
On Bremo, but they're empty, but the ones coming down West Bottom are full.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, but literally five dump trucks in a row.
Right.
Boom. How long does this continue on? There was
That's what we don't know. That's what we need to talk to.
I thought there was a time frame, though, that they had so much to get out of there. Well, it takes so long to get out.
Two whole different stories. So we need to do this some other time.
Yeah.
Part of what I briefed you 2 weeks ago, and we need to.
Things have kind of changed a little bit.
Well, this is added to it.
Okay.
So it's
if there are trucks coming in down West Bottom Road loaded.
Loaded.
I want to know what they're loaded with.
Dirt.
just covering everything up.
Good.
Oh, that's right. I literally talked to one of the kids that graduated 2 years ago. Is driving the bulldozer down there for him, and he was telling me that they're redoing the pond.
Yeah, the west pond.
The ones next to the plant itself,
right.
They're redoing those ponds after they've removed all the ash.
Right.
Is it Remo dirt or Columbia dirt, though?
It's neither. It's neither. It's coming from out of the area. That's the problem.
All right. Do we have anything else?
Yep. So one more thing. So on the screen, I think you can see it down there. We got an inquiry from the state, and we got an inquiry from TJPDC. 2020 census is coming up. The federal government, and Virginia has followed that lead, has a thing called 2020 Census Complete Count Committees, and they wanted to know if our county is going to set up a 2020 Census Complete Count Committee. TJPDC wanted to know, and there's only a few on the state website. There's only a few localities that have signed up, about 10 or so out of the 140 some towns and counties around the Commonwealth. So the state wanted to know that, and then TJPDC said, would you at all be interested in doing this as a regional committee where they could have reps from the various different counties rather than every county trying to set up this committee themselves? And I told TJPDC that I certainly am not particularly interested in setting up one more committee to meet that we don't have any guidance on, but if they were going to do something regional, the board might be interested in appointing a couple of representatives from Flavanna to participate in this. And this is to create interest and awareness in the legally required 2020 census. And here's the, I'll show you just briefly down here, the so here's a little note on the screen just on what a complete count committee is. They're volunteer committees established by tribal, state, and local governments to increase awareness and motivate residents to respond to the 2020 census. Now, you can motivate citizens to respond. It's legally required. It doesn't mean they're going to, but you're legally required to respond to the census. But it would be part of the marketing arm and part of the, you know, getting the word out and things like that. So I told the state that we did not have a committee and it wasn't being contemplated this time, but I wanted to respond back to TJPDC. Do you want to participate, or would you be interested in participating in a regional effort if TJPDC takes the lead on this to get the localities under their arm to do a complete count committee? Yes or no?
Or,
I don't really understand what they want us to do.
Make sure that it's legal and everything by that committee. I mean, you know what I'm sort of saying?
Well, this document I'm showing you now is from the federal government. This is their document. They established this program. Virginia has followed the lead. There's a, I can pull it up here quick. Well, that went to community college system, but there we go. No complete care. Man, there's a lot of CCCs apparently. Virginia. There we go. So this is the state website, and what they're doing is there's resources for localities on here, and this is their information for local complete count committees based on the federal guidelines. And this is who has a local complete count committee now, these cities and localities around the state. And so and I'd never heard of it before, but the state sent an email out the other day and asked, were the counties participating or not, or do they intend to? And VACO then asked the same thing, and then TJPDC came out with a discussion about it, asking if the counties would be interested in doing something regionally rather than individually, or at all.
It seems to me that the purpose of the census is to get a complete count of as many people, and to the degree that, you know, the county can participate in that effort, I think that's a good thing for our citizens.
Well, the census is really important for us, from a funding point of view, to get it accurate. from a, you know, state and federal funding point of view, census is one of the crucial tools that's used for funding for us from all kinds of sources. Right. So the census is important to us as a locality, but so this was a hot potato I'd rather have you all talk about.
And they do pay, but I don't think a lot of money, but they do pay people to come in and ask questions. You have to go house to house.
Yes, they hire folks for the census every 10 years.
But I don't know what the Thomas Jefferson Planning District wants us to do.
So,
how many people do they want? Do they want citizens to be appointed?
This is completely off the cuff from them. They said, I would welcome your comments if local government intends to develop and manage a complete count committee. If not, the TJPDC may be able to convene and facilitate one committee for the entire region. Work by this committee would take place from the summer of 2019 through May of 2020. The census is done in April of 2020. While the TJPDC would have no funds for marketing or materials, we could provide some staffing to assist in developing marketing programs and materials that each jurisdiction could produce and distribute. Social media distribution would be one of the most cost-effective and within the work of the TJPDC, but does not normally reach the most vulnerable populations. Of course, prioritization by the commission and the jurisdictions could allow us to utilize funding currently budgeted for other areas into this effort, and he plans to bring it up to the TJPDC Commission at a monthly meeting on June 6th. So there is no specific pattern to it, and even for a locality, there's no specific requirements from the state or from the feds on how the committee has to look and how many people are on it. It's just a suggested outline of the types of things that the committee could work on, like this. When should it be established? Now. What should it do? Help advertise and market the census. I'm not thrilled about having one more committee to manage, but this is more of a question for you all.
Right. I think the sort of question is, you know, what is the viability of us doing it as a county alone versus doing it through something like the TJPDC? They'll present it, you know, or the TJPDC commission will, as a group, decide whether it's of value or not.
There's another element that I think suggests that regional involvement is appropriate, and that is, if you all recall, we've had problems with the voting districts and whatnot with the county boundary, and the way the statutes are now stated for the state legislative offices, they go by census tract, so. We're going to need to jump into that with both feet sooner than later. And it seems to me that while we're dealing with those issues, it would be helpful if we had regional treatment so we could do it all at one time.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the only thing we're deciding now is whether we should look at participation.
Yeah, and so if you look on the screen here, this is sample activities. Make a list of community-based organizations and hold a meeting with leaders and solicit their help in creating census awareness campaign. Host census solutions workshop. Check the community calendar area for events. That's the kind of stuff this committee would be doing, and it would be really a committee of citizens. But if you don't want to do that, are you interested in potentially having representatives from Savannah County that you appoint on the regional census, complete census count committee, and let TJPDC take the lead? But
yes.
You just don't know what you're getting into sometimes.
Well, we're not deciding anything other than letting the TJPDC explore, and I think that they make a pretty
okay.
They try to make a compelling presentation because they have to convince the commission, right? So.
And let's say they ended up wanting, you know, three representatives from each locality, one elected official and two citizens or something. Then we'd come back to you and say, do you want to do that? You'd say yes or no, and then we'd give you, you know, we'd advertise it and get a slate of candidates.
Who handled this in 2010? How did we do it?
They didn't have one of these that I know of. I wasn't here, but they didn't have one of these that I know of.
It wasn't
about problems.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember
accusations made.
I had a teenage son that I could scream, I could have a bomb go off near my house, which has been happening for
And he wouldn't answer the door.
And he would never get up off the couch. But I had a sweet knock at the door. I walked outside and one lady said, "Good morning, John Michael." And all of a sudden, he comes tumbling down the steps like as an avalanche. I'm like, "What are you doing?" I heard Miss Key. I'm going to get my hug.
That was
Miss Key at my door. That's the only thing I can truly remember from the 2010 census.
Well, regardless of what anybody thinks about it, the census is important from a state and federal funding point of view. And the political considerations aside about what questions they ask or don't ask, the census is important to our locality.
Sure, it is.
So based on your discussion, I'll let TJPDC know we'd be interested in participating in a regional commission of some type, or regional committee.
Okay? All right, before I open the second round of public comment, I just want to take a second. I believe today, a little bird made me aware of it, but today is National Law Enforcement Recognition Day.
It is.
I'd like to thank the sheriff and the wonderful staff that he's put together and for all that they do for our county and keeping us safe and everything else. I love seeing them around the schools. I love seeing them working with kids.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and thank you so much for all you do, sir.
Absolutely.
All right, now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wish to address the board, please step to the witness chair, state your name and address, keep your comments 5 minutes, and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? Oh, come on, y'all know y'all want. Okay, not seeing no one, I'll close second round of public comment. Do we have a closed meeting? No.
Nope.
And do we have a motion to adjourn?
No.
Do you have a motion? Let's look back on this book. I don't want to. You might be friendly fire.
I guess next.
We have a motion made to adjourn. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank y'all very much.